Penny, can you start by just telling me about yourself and where you are and what facility you are residing in?
Okay. I have a rare disease called Guillain-Barré, I can answer you separately for spelling, two French doctors. Guillain-Barré syndrome. I'm living in a nursing home in Massachusetts, currently named, it's had different owners. So at the moment, its name is Braintree, like the town, Manor, M-A-N-O-R, healthcare. And I'm in my 19th year here. Braintree, Manor, M-A-N-O-R, healthcare, one word. It's a skilled nursing.
And you said you've been there 19 years?
My anniversary is December 26th.
Wow.
That begins in December.
20. How has the, I know this is a broad question, but how has the facility and the experience changed in the last 19, 20 years?
Well, I can say to you separately, but the current owner that we have bought it before, and started running it December 117 is a much worse owner than before, but we won't waste your time on, you know, cutting staff intentionally, staff being injured, being having surgery, could not be able to come back to work. I mean, seriously, I'm just staffing at one point. I'm the main complaint. I get one of these staff being assaulted. I have to contact OSHA. I'm the person that solved these problems. The long story.
So can you tell me about your favorite, any hobbies you have or activities that you participate in? I know you're very active as an advocate for residents in long-term care. Perhaps that's one of the activities you want to talk about.
I don't have much. First of all, I'll give you a sense of my disability. I can't walk. I mean, my legs are paralyzed. I can't raise my shoulders. My elbows work. My fingers overlap. So in terms of activities, I'm sort of limited. I go out in the community all the time, which means I can go to the library, I can use a computer, I can go shopping, I can have a pedicure, I can eat out, you know, I can do lots of stuff like that. But, you know, I used to do my own photography, print my own thing, do woodblock printing. I used to go to studios and do a lot of artwork, hands-on photography and, you know, monoprints, all kinds of works on paper. That used to be that's impossible. I can't stand, I can't go back and forth to the sink to wash, you know. So, and I really don't have a lot of time. I spend 8 or 10, 12 hours a day working. I got a big piece, 15 Gmail pages right now, regular. Got to finish editing to go to an article for a submission for print. So most of my activities are around writing at night. I do a lot of writing. I'm giving a lecture in June 10th, and I'm giving one in July. I forget, I don't have the day yet. I mean, I do so much writing and speaking and publishing that's all I really can fit into my schedule. But it's a lot of fun. I like it. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. So I don't have any, I mean, you know, I talk to my friends on the phone. We have lunch. You know, we were able to eat all winter. We have a wonderful restaurant in my town that was under a tent, which they heated so we can social distance. So, I mean, I socialize with my friends, but I don't have any other activities, you know, that I can really do. Right. I can write cards to people and mail them. I can write. You know, I can't do substantive kind of hobby type stuff. You know, used to be artwork, so I can't do it.
Right, and you're a PhD in French language and literature, is that right?
Yeah, but it turned out to be a very interesting career. I was a Peace Corps trainer for French West Africa. I taught at the Harvard School of Government at Kennedy School of Government at Harvard, working with mid-career government officials, you know, on development. And I was kind of like their go-to academic support person, teaching how to write graduate-level papers. And worked in the Dominican Republic on USAID money. Back, I was there for the first building of the first tourist hotel, and I had USAID money to start a program to get homeless people off the streets by teaching English to work in the new tourist industry. So I did a lot of interesting things that it's not quite such an esoteric, you know, field as it might appear. Because I did teach French, I did teach ESL for a long time, but I had a lot of really hands-on, interesting things I did. And in my building, I teach people all the time. I mean, people from Haiti, I speak French with them. People. The Portuguese, I don't speak Portuguese, but I speak Spanish. But I teach people even in the building things like over their college papers, make sure they're done right. You know, I do a little of that stuff. Yeah.
And so it seems like a lot of your interests are relate to writing, relate to communication. How have those interests been impacted by the by the pandemic? And
not at all.
Not at
because,
all.
No, because, you know, I have access to a computer that has not been, you know, the only thing that happened, well, not really. I mean, the library was shut down for a long time and we don't have, we took away our printer from our resident computer sometime. That's a long, crazy story. So, I mean, I was able to get our receptionist to print for me, like, so I could do different drafts and then, you know, it's, so, I mean, this is all done through the internet. I mean, I submit through the internet. I write, I draft, I edit, I submit. And any speaking games I had have been done virtually during the pandemic. So that's the only difference, they weren't in person. But it hasn't interfered with my work at all, the pandemic.
I'm guessing you actually get more, I saw you on John Oliver the other the other day. And I know you're, you were involved in the committee. So it sounds like this has led to a lot of attention for you.
All kinds of unpredictable, like the Columbia School of Journalism interviewed me last week. You just never know until you open your email box. I'm a policy advisor to the CMS, the Division of Nursing Homes, with Richard Beck Ruby. It's very varied. So it's not like I get bored by it. And I'm a disability advocate as well, not just the nursing home. So that makes, I mean, as a plaintiff in a Title II lawsuit against the town of Braintree at the same judge in federal district court in Boston as the Varsity Blues, Nathaniel Gordon. So, I do a lot of interesting things that are unrelated to the nursing home. So.
What challenges have you faced over the last year that you mentioned didn't really impact a lot of your interests and work, but are there any challenges related to the pandemic that you did face, anyways, that it did affect you negatively?
In my case, I don't think I was negatively impacted by the pandemic, except that some of my friends didn't come to visit me to eat out because they had other responsibilities during the pandemic. One of them is the mother of a nurse. So her nurse, her daughter was so called upon to work all the time. She was babysitting for her children, grandchildren, I mean, things like that. Indirectly, yes, things like that affected the number of people who came to visit. But if they came to visit, we ate outside in this tent. It wasn't like we didn't go to any small restaurants. We were close together. Where we ate very different, but it's actually better quality food. When I went shopping, the stores all had social distancing, one-way aisles, a limited number of people in the store at the same time. So I was not interfered with my local shopping at all. I mean, nothing with my advocacy. I mean, I had trouble getting medical care. I couldn't get to my podiatrist. I went to, got a pedicures in my neighborhood instead, things like that. I mean, I didn't really have any other reason to see my podiatrist. So, medically, but not in terms of my advocacy. My advocacy wasn't affected.
So did you have restrictions as far as whether you were able to leave the facility and
return? No, nobody gave me trouble. They don't touch me. Trust me. I mean, I'm too powerful. I had no problems.
That's interesting.
Uh-huh. They even told, we've had 6 administrators, 6 directors of nursing in a year. And people even said, people are afraid to work here because I supervise everybody. I have problems today. I just go to the Board of Registration of Nursing about my director of nursing today. We won't go to that today. But I'm just telling you now, they don't, they don't do their job. I make sure that the state knows about it. Even the administrators, they don't touch me. Yeah, I mean, I'm too powerful. I didn't know I was that powerful. Everybody made it clear to me I am.
You mentioned not necessarily being able to like go out with, see your friends less. Did that lead to any loneliness or isolation for you?
Not really, because I can talk to them on the phone. And don't forget, I live in a building with hundreds of people. Like when I go to the neighborhood, everybody knows the post. Everybody knows by name, the post office, every store. I mean, I observe what we call neighborhood, friends or something like that. I'm on the sidewalk. They say, "Oh, we saw you on television." Even strangers stop to talk to me. Little kids want to talk about my power chair. There's a lot of people in my life. Don't get me wrong.
So it sounds like you, and you mentioned they're scared of you and you're powerful.
Yeah. Other people went out too. I'm not the only person. Went out. Mm-hmm.
What advice would you give to residents that might not have the same power that you have, or residents that maybe just don't know about their rights in the same way that
Problem is it's hard to do. I try not to get too involved in causing trouble in the building. They give me trouble, I speak up about like the management or something. I tried to explain to a couple of people, but it's more complicated than it appears, because it depends. I don't know their status, whether they have a guardian or not. First of all, my building is unusual. three of our four units are neuropsychiatric rehab units, neurobehavioral. We've got a lot of people with neurological brain injury and behavior. So a lot of those people really aren't safe outside. A lot of people really did suffer. And we went through different phases where we had limited visitation and they had to pull back and things like that. We had almost no COVID in the building because all of our people are younger and healthier. They're not older with comorbidities. So I think we had four or five people die and then we gained the pandemic. You know, a year ago, nobody since. We were very unusual. I don't know why my voice is getting dry here. Get a little cough drop. I can do much. We're a very unusual building where people, you know, we're not elderly and we're not sick. So if they're physically, you know, healthy people who, you know, like I say, had suffered from, you know, brain injury from drug overdose, hypoxia, or, you know, car accidents, or, you know, so they're ambulatory, they can walk around, they can shower themselves, and they're not stuck in their room bored. But they're still limited to their units only because they're behavioral and they need a lot of supervision. They just can't loan in other units where people don't know how to manage their behaviors. If they have them, they vary in terms of the severity of their behaviors. But I did work a lot with the activities director who was in charge of visitation, making charge of activities in her offices on my unit. So I made sure to continually update her on the latest visitation rights of residents. I worked at more from an administrative level down than trying to educate people that I didn't know very well what their diagnosis was, what their guardianship status was. You know, I didn't want to, and their ability to understand something as complicated, visitation rights, which was changing a lot. It went back and forth. The guidance was not consistent. So, you know, it's not like I keep updating them. So I didn't get involved to talk to residents about it.
And what about just maybe not residents in your facility, but just people in general that are in long-term care? Do you have any just general advice for others as far as advocating for themselves and understanding their rights?
Well, I mean, I would recommend that maybe the long-term care ombudsman program works with residents in terms of resident councils and nursing homes. Educate them about groups like your group, and we have similar groups in Massachusetts. Massachusetts Advocates for Nursing Home Reform. That they, you know, if they have the internet capability to sign up and be on their listserv, they can keep track of what's going on, the latest on the pandemic, what their rights are, things like that. Have some system for educating people about where they can get resources during a pandemic, or what their rights are, or what their rights are in general, but then rights specific to the pandemic, like visitation. But that presumes people have the intellectual interest, capacity, and tech access to do it.
Yeah, what changes would you like to see in the long-term care system based on the experiences you've been through and also just the experiences that you've seen others go through in the last year?
COVID mostly affected me by the fact that I was on the White House Coronavirus Commission. I was the only resident out of 800 applicants, 25 selected. I spoke on COVID a lot. I published on COVID. COVID affected me mostly in terms of my advocacy, in terms of the way I was in demand to be contacted for it. So, okay, leaving that aside, back to your question, which I'm sorry, I did forget. What was your question? I so rudely interrupted.
So, based on the experiences of the last year, I know your experience might have been unique compared to other people living in long-term care settings. But based on your experience and based on what you've seen, what do you think needs to change in nursing homes?
Well, that's a big question. I'm not sure if you're saying we should be moving toward the greenhouse project, individual rooms, smaller buildings, better benefits, working conditions for staff so that they can afford to take off if they need to, hazard pay. I mean, that's a big question in terms of the whole revamping of the long-term care system, which we know needs doing. And for residents themselves, you know, we want, should something like a similar pandemic where it extends. I mean, you want to make sure that they have access to information, their rights, technology, so they can, you know, Zoom their family members and talk if they can't get out of the building or people can't come in. But the system needs to be changed. And we need more people, more funding, you know, change in the priorities, more funding for long-term care services in the community, paying family members, taking people out of poverty who are disabled so they can, and getting, you know, Medicaid to pay for more home, you know, living in the community, independent living. I mean, we need a whole shift in the system. That's a complicated question.